We hope you enjoy the upcoming All-Star game this coming Tuesday night. But the All-Star game came to Old Comiskey Park in Chicago on July 6, 1983, 50 years to the day of the first All-Star game, also at Comiskey Park. The game at the corner of 35th and Shields Bilvec Drive is best remembered for Freddie Lynn's Grand Slam, the first, amazingly, in the 54-game history of the Midsummer Classic. That helped the American League to its first victory in 12 years and only its second win since 1962. That game was just one highlight in the glorious history of the ballpark, captured so well in Last Comiskey from Eckhart's Press and author Ken Smoller. Ken, it's great to have you on the show. But first, a personal question to a guy from the south side of Chicago as we begin our interview. Any Cubs fans in the
Sounds
family?
good. It's funny. Every family in Chicago seems to be mixed. I was raised in the northwest
Mixed.
suburbs, but somehow became a Sox fan. And that's passed on through the generations, like it is in New York and Los Angeles and the Bay Area and it used to be in Boston. And that's where I grew up, going to Comiskey Park.
How did you become a White Sox fan?
It started all the way back when I was a little kid in 1977, and my dad brought me the first time to Comiskey as his father had done. And I fell in love immediately. The arches that allowed you to look out into the streets, the great scoreboard, Bilvec's monster exploding scoreboard that would explode each time there was a home run, the great Nancy Faust organ playing na na na, hey hey goodbye every time there was a big moment in the team. And it really just sucked me in early. The whole experience really was an arousal of the senses and not like what you see in any ballpark today.
Have you managed in the major leagues and in the American League after the demise of Comiskey Park, the original that we're talking about? Were you ever in there?
No, not the original. But I tell you what, one time way before a game, the left field, it looked like it was so deep in the angle for the fans to sit up in the stands. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I went up there and I said, man, this looks dangerous. I went way up there in the far left field and I looked like I was looking straight down. It was really kind of scary for me. I don't know if that's correct or if you felt that way, but that's how I looked at it when I went up
I
there as a
think you
kid.
nailed it. Well, the new park certainly has that feel. The old park, you were hanging over the field, which was, I think, a feature rather than a bug. You really felt like you were on top of the action. The thing that's different in those parks that you don't get today is they had pillars, a post holding up the upper deck. So sure, you had a lot of seats that were blocked by the posts. But what it did was brought you really close to the infield, both in the outfield seats and in the infield seats. You really were close and felt like you were part of the action, creating this crazy noise that even when there was only 3, 4, 5,000 fans, which happened more than you would like as a White Sox fan, it still was noisy. And you don't get that with these big ballparks today with luxury suites and upper decks that are pushed much higher into the sky. You don't get the intimacy.
It was interesting. I always like to do that at different ballparks I managed in because I just wanted to see what it looked like for the fans. So it's kind of cool.
One of my things that I always did every time I visited a new ballpark in the majors was go behind home plate and take a photo, a wide angle photo from the upper deck of the whole field. And that was something at Comiskey Park that was particularly special because you were really close to the mound in that case. You were barely more than probably about 90, 100 feet from the mound.
That's right.
Ken, your book is a companion piece adapted from a documentary that was released last year. How did you come to be involved?
The documentary, which was a fantastic one done by first-time documentarian Matt Flesch, was about both the last season of Old Comiskey Park in particular, but the park in general. And Matt had put out a request for photos and videos to fans over social media. I had hundreds and hundreds of photos in negative form in my archives that I had taken, and I was happy to share them with Matt. Once the film came out and really, I think, had a lot of success because it brought back so many memories for not just White Sox fans, but baseball fans, those who had been to Comiskey and those who had watched it on TV, and also the younger ones that had never seen it, we decided that sports fans, baseball fans, really would like to have all those photos from the park that we couldn't include in the film, just to jog their memories and bring back those nostalgic feelings. And I had, like I said, hundreds and hundreds of photos I took then as a college photographer for the University of Michigan. I had taken a bunch of days off of work from my summer job and photographed really every nook and cranny of that ballpark. Not just the action on the field, but the stands, the folks that inhabited the park, Nancy Faust, as I mentioned before, the organist, or Andy the Clown, the sort of unofficial mascot, or the shoeshine guy that had been there for decades, all the sort of parts of the park that made it feel special and something that was more of a family experience and not just a ballpark or a stadium.
And I'm glad you brought that up about being a photographer, because you're much more than just a writer, also being a photographer. And your book says this, quote, "In more than three decades of extensive traveling, he has photographed over 2,350 stadiums in 48 states in 24 countries. Ken's mantra is that one of the best ways to understand the culture and fabric of a place is through its sporting arenas and stadiums." Expand on that for us, Ken.
Sure. After college, I decided that I just really wanted to see as many stadiums and ballparks as I could. And I'm a big traveler, both for work and personal reasons. And every time I go somewhere, I want to really get to know a city or a new country. And when you go to their sporting events, you really get a sense of the place. You understand the architecture of a particular city. You get to know the music that is important to those folks in that city, the food, the personality. Every fan base represents both, the upper echelons of wealth down to the working man, and old to young, and all different ethnicities. And you really get a sense as to what the place is, because you see folks from all over and you really understand what a city is like based on going to their sporting events. And that's something that Comiskey Park surely had. Its architecture absolutely reflected the bold architecture of Chicago at the turn of the last century, the prairie style arches, the reverence for classical architecture that was an outgrowth of the 1893 World's Fair. And then you throw in the music and the sort of sarcastic nature of the Chicago sports fan with the way in which the fans would jeer, sort of a little different than a Bronx cheer, but there certainly was a sarcasm to White Sox fans, which was, Comiskey, of course, was known as the world's largest outdoor saloon. White Sox fans then and today were outpacing their brethren to the north by drinking far more beer. And I think today they still drink more beer per fan than any other fan base in the country. And you really got that personality coming through. And so that's why I really love always to go to new stadiums anywhere I go. I try to get there for a game, but just otherwise get a quick picture. I haven't been to 2,300 games necessarily, but I've at least snuck into 2,300 ballparks, stadiums, arenas, et cetera, and snapped a quick photo before moving on.
You were also a vendor at the new Comiskey Park during its first three seasons. Here in New York, Ken, no one I know has ever said that the new Yankee Stadium over its 15 years is better than the old one. Is it like that in Chicago?
There's not a single person who has walked into New Comiskey Park who has said this is an improvement upon what they had. I think every White Sox fan laments the demolition of Old Comiskey. I think they really resent the fact that the elements of the park that were important to White Sox and baseball fans weren't carried across the street. And I think a lot of Sox fans would have preferred the bargain that was made in 1974 and would have had a preferred a restoration of Old Comiskey, like what they did in the Bronx, and would have gladly played at Wrigley Field or County Stadium for a couple of years, so that they could have kept Comiskey Park for another generation or two, like the fans in New York got with Yankee Stadium until 2008. As bad as a lot of fans feel about new Yankee Stadium, I would argue it is a much better approximation of old Yankee Stadium than what new Comiskey Park displays about old Comiskey Park. You know, I look at photos that I've taken side by side of the two, and they're certainly not the same, but you can squint in old Yankee, new Yankee Stadium and feel like you were in the old ballpark across the street, and you get a sense of that place. I don't think you get that with new Comiskey. And as much as old, new Yankee Stadium has problems, and it certainly does, with the moat, with the blocked views and the outfield and others, I think it's a really good replication of the old ballpark with new amenities.
That's what it's all about. It's about the suites. It's about the amenities. No comparison between your two ballparks in Chicago and the Yankees going across the street. The problem is that for those of a certain age who enjoyed and grew up and were introduced to baseball in old Yankee Stadium, Tino Martinez, for example, after hitting a home run, went around the same base paths as Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. And, and that's what's missed. The original Comiskey Park was born in 1910. It lived through the 1990 season. And yet, Ken, it is never mentioned in the same breath or revered like Wrigley Field, Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium. It was always underrated.
I think that's definitely the case. And I think it was underrated partially because of the fact that the White Sox, like the Mets in New York, were the second team for the last few decades of the White Sox history. The team up north was owned by WGN and the Tribune Company, and they had a lot more notoriety throughout the country, given the superstation, and people knew about Wrigley Field, but those fans who were real diehard baseball fans knew and appreciated Comiskey Park for its history. Not just the first All-Star game, but you had the Negro League All-Star games that took their place there for decades. It was packed to the gills with fans of those Negro League All-Stars for decades until integration finally happened. You also had the Chicago Cardinals playing there. The odd thing is the Cardinals, who are now in Arizona, of course, played more games at Comiskey Park than any other venue that they played in. That'll change in a couple of years. People forget about that as well. There just was a lot of history. The Beatles played there. There was a lot of big prize fights that occurred there as well. It really was the stadium of the city and of the people. But it didn't get that kind of notoriety nationwide because the White Sox didn't have the same media reach that the Cubs enjoyed.
And Kevin, 1983 All-Star game in Chicago, you remember the American League wins 13-3.
I do remember.
Their first victory in 12 years over the National League. They set an American League record scoring 13 runs. Also, there's a record 6 hits and 7 runs in the third inning, highlighted by the Freddie Lynn Grand Slam. The 10-run margin of victory was the largest since 1946. But it has always been amazing to me, Kev, that that was the first Grand Slam in All-Star history when Freddie Lynn hit it off of Atlee Hammacher, then of the Giants.
Yep, I remember that like it was yesterday, because in those days I was always watching every All-Star game, and certainly I was watching that one. I was, you know, still playing and became actually starting to become a manager at the time, so I was always interested in what was going on. And yeah, I remember it because I knew Freddie Lynn, and we played against him at San Diego State when he was at USC, and I knew what a great player he was. And of course, later became a Red Sox, which happened for me as well. But when he hit that Grand Slam, I did not know that either, Ed, what you just said, that that hadn't been done before until him. But I remember that off a Hammacher, that pitch. I certainly remember that for sure.
Vin Scully had pointed it out just before that, saying that when the bases got loaded up, that there never had been a grand slam. And then just a second later, he knocked that ball into the right field bleachers.
Yep,
and
that's Vinny.
That ballpark just exploded with, you know, I unfortunately was watching it on TV with a lot of other folks, but you could just see it shaking. The camera was shaking. At that time, we all really cared a lot about the All-Star game.
Yeah.
And it was getting embarrassing, I remember, for the AL fans that they hadn't won for over a decade. And that
was
a big deal in those days.
Yeah, it's true.
In our remaining moments, with Ken Smaller, who has written Last Kaminsky about the original Kaminsky Park, which was home to Nancy Faust. You mentioned her earlier, the legendary, legendary organist who moved with the ballpark, stayed with the team until 2010, and she provided the soundtrack of summer for Chicago White Sox baseball, Ken.
Nancy Faust is the real hero of the book. Not just the hero of the book, but she's the hero of a lot of White Sox fans. She plays a big role in the book because she is a bridge from the old park and from the old era to the new one. She did things that I don't think people realize. She created the anthem of Na 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 Na, Hey Hey Goodbye as a sports anthem. She essentially invented the walk-up song by having a unique, distinctive song for every player when they came to bat. She was someone who brought pop music into the ballpark. Not anymore would you hear just da-da-da-da-da charge or things along that line. She brought in contemporary music, and she did it in a way. For those fans who remember what Paul Schaefer was like on Late Night with David Letterman, she had an irreverence and a sarcasm where she would take what was happening in the game and reconstitute it during music, using music. And he would always try to figure out what it was that she was doing with her musical renditions that she did. Amazingly, she also plays by ear, which is a shocking thing. She's just one of the most talented people that you could imagine, and just a special human being. And White Sox fans just absolutely treasure her.
The book also features the Southside Hitmen. Kevin, you remember the Southside Hitmen of the 70s who wore short pants? They wore short pants for a Hall of Fame manager, Ken and Larry Doby.
Do I remember?
You know, that's when I started becoming a Sox fan, and that's when the actual year that Na 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 became the anthem, they hit so many balls out of the ballpark that the fans just, you know, couldn't be contained with their glee when pitchers would be sent to the showers. And that was, you know, going back to what I said earlier, that's an aspect of the Chicago personality, I think, that really comes through in musical form via Nancy Faust talent.
And then at the end of the 70s, in 1979, the worst promotion ever, Disco Demolition Night, Ken.
Yeah, 45 years ago, today, tonight. Arguably, and this is something that Mike Vec, Bill Vec's son, who was responsible for it, said, it was the best promotion ever. He said they were too successful. Because what they ended up doing is offering tickets for 98 cents, which were was the call number for WLUP radio. Steve Dahl, who was a Howard Stern-like shock jock, who actually predated Howard, said that if you brought in a disco record, you could get in for 98 cents. Between games of the doubleheader and center field, they blew up the records. But unfortunately, over 5 to 10,000 extra fans were in the ballpark that had snuck in. And the fans all went onto the field and tore it up and were throwing around the records. And it essentially became a big old party, riot, whatever you want to call it, depending on your point of view. And the White Sox had to forfeit game two, unfortunately, to the Tigers on the official forfeit score of 9-0, because the field was unplayable despite the great Roger Bossard, known as the Sod Father, who's the longest tenured White Sox employee, being on hand. He still couldn't salvage that field that day, and they had to forfeit game two. Don Paul, who's featured in the book, played for the White Sox and was actually in attendance that day as a fan when he was a teenager growing up in Evergreen Park outside of Chicago.
Yeah, and I think there's video of Kevin Kennedy actually climbing one of the foul poles. I think it was in left field that night.
That looks like Donkey Kong with a fan climbing up and down the foul pole.
All I know is this. I wrote Bill Veeck a letter when I was broadcasting, doing the play-by-play of the Vancouver Canadians in the Oakland organization in the Pacific Coast League that summer. And he wrote back, Bill Veeck did, and he invited me to come to Comiskey Park. And so I diverted going from Vancouver back to New York, and I stopped in Chicago, and the man took me into the pump room, the legendary ornate pump room for lunch. I will never forget Bill Veeck and his kindness to me and that ballpark. The book is called Last Comiskey. It is from Eckhart's Press and from Ken Smoller. Ken, thank you so much for being with us. All best wishes to you.
Thanks so much. And the book is available, by the way, at www.lastcomiskeybook.com. That's lastcomiskeybook.com.
We thank Ken Smoller for being with us. Back with you on Remember When after this.